Now we move on to our roundtable and our panel, continuing the discussion of the Middle East and talking about whether the Justice Department will enforce the Voting Rights Act. Joining us today is Callie Crossley. She's a social and cultural commentator on the Boston television show Beat the Press. She joins us from Harvard University Studios in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And at our New York bureau is Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post, plus Marcelo Suarez Orozco, co-director of immigration studies at New York University. Welcome to you all, and just want to get right back into the Middle East. Robert, you're an editorial writer for the New York Post. What are you guys saying about what the U.S. role should be in this whole situation?
Well, our view is that Hezbollah obviously is a terrorist organization, and it has initiated this particular crisis, and that the president is correct to point out that that Israel has a right to defend itself, and we are basically starting from that position, and I think we're somewhat happy with the basic statement that came out of the G8 summit, underscoring the fact that the terrorist insurgency kind of basically has to stop. Obviously, the United States is in certain ways has a different point of view from some of its G8 partners on the amount of force that Israel is producing. But generally speaking, we support what Israel is doing to defend itself.
Callie, continuing this in the context of what the U.S. should do as opposed to what Israel should do or what Lebanon should do, the U.S. at certain points in time has tried to bring people to the table at Camp David to bridge differences between Arab states and Israel. Could you even foresee at this point something like that happening again?
Yes, I could. And in fact, over the weekend, Dianne Feinstein really suggested strongly several times that she thought that President Clinton and President Bush I should be sent immediately to be a part of the voices who are trying to negotiate a peace. That would be in concert with Condoleezza Rice, of course, and in concert with the UN folks who are landing on the ground, I think, either today or tomorrow to make this happen. So there is very much a push for diplomacy, but at the same time, as I have heard, it seems that most of the folks speaking out say Israel has the right to defend itself and, in fact, should continue to defend itself, and this is not too much force at this moment. So we stand by their ability to do so. I think it's interesting that from the G8 summit, there was no call for a ceasefire, which seems to suggest that even though there are some who have articulated a difference in position with the U.S., nobody is willing to tell Israel to just stop, or, you know, you can't demand that Hezbollah does because they operate outside of the sovereignty. But the point is that nobody's wanting to come out and say just flatly, okay, ceasefire. So that suggests a continuing support for Israel across the board, even if people disagree with the United States' strong stand.
Right.
And Marcelo, the idea of use of force, there's rockets being fired in both directions, but many more civilians dying in Lebanon. At what point does a disproportionate use of force then change the equation and force countries to reconsider how they should go about approaching the two nations here?
Well, in the era of instantaneous media, where the entire war is now witness to the attacks and the counter attacks, I think that becomes a factor that needs to be carefully considered. But I think going back to the issue of the U.S., I think this crisis, when we one day look back, will represent the final nail in the coffin of unilateral use of preemptive force in terms of the general theory that has characterized the current administration, and really the reemergence of a shuttle approach to diplomacy that we saw in earlier iterations of the Middle East conflict, the Kissinger type of approach, where it is through the hard work of complex democracy, it is through the hard work of having and cultivating interlocutors that we will begin to see a long-term solution to the current dynamic. The notion that we were going to install democracy in Iraq and that this was going to flourish throughout the region is really now buried.
And Farai, just to follow up on that, also following up what Professor Harris Lacewell was saying in the previous segment, it's also, I think, notable that in the context of world reaction, that there has been a stronger condemnation of what Hezbollah is doing from Arab states such as Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, which suggests that even though they are certainly not going to agree with the United States position and then are certainly not going to agree with Israel's position, there is a seeming willingness amongst Arab states to try and control some of these extremist factions that are really fueling the fire.
Well, maybe you can go back to Marcelo's point about the era of preemptive war is over. Do you believe that's true? Do you believe in this is a doctrine developed under the current administration of President Bush that, you know, if you can go in and take a first strike if it is for self-defense?
I think there is something to that. I mean, all you have to see is the fact that while we, in a sense, we lumped North Korea, Iran, and Iraq as an axis of evil, but the United States' options when it comes to North Korea, for example, seem to be somewhat limited. Even though there seems to be a lot of evidence. That Iran is behind Hezbollah. The United States is not really rattling the sabers towards Iran. So it suggests that from a rhetorical nature, and also just the fact that we have so many of our forces committed in Iraq right now that we can't really and Afghanistan is becoming a problem once again. We can't pivot around and then try and take on Iran as well. It suggests that there seems to be they're almost forced to go back towards a rhetorical and a diplomatic approach as opposed to a military one.
Well, I want to get Callie in, but first, just following up with you, Robert. So now you're saying it looks as if Iran is off the table for military action. But even a couple of months ago, there was a lot of talk and speculation in the newspapers that the U.S. was looking into some kind of military action against Iran. You believe that that's a done deal? There's no way now with the current situation that that's going to happen?
I'm, as I said, in this way, I'm going to say I'm speaking solely for myself here, and not necessarily the post editorial position. I mean, I think we would like a strong position towards Iran, but I mean, I think you have to sort of, in a sense, see what the facts are on the ground. You've got a situation where the Taliban seems to be making some kind of a comeback within Afghanistan, even though there is something of a government. In Iraq, there was another huge suicide bombing yesterday as well. So that is not yet under control. So unless there seems to be a suggestion that the United States has Iraq under control, trying to then turn around towards to deal with Iran in anything more than a multi-country diplomatic approach I think it's several months off, several months in the future, if at all.
And Callie, are we starting to experience as a nation combat fatigue on the voter side? The U.S., even though we almost always talk about Iraq, is actually fighting on two fronts, Afghanistan and Iraq, and now potentially will get involved diplomatically on a third front. What are American people going to burn out?
Oh, they've already burned out. And I think the escalation of what's going on in the Middle East has captured the attention of the nation, I think, in ways that people may in the past have glazed over about. But, you know, when you start talking about 25,000 Americans trapped, for one thing, that gets some attention. And then when you start realizing the complexity of the situation, that it's not as simple as just saying, okay, now y'all stop that, that there really are, as the professor said, you know, four nations involved here. And by the way, one of them is Iran. So we are really engaged in some way, in a long distance way with Iran as it is. is. And so it comes down to understanding that this is really, though characterized as a regional war, I mean, this is a global problem. And for the United States, let's just bring two words, gas and North Korea. I mean, we got to deal with those escalating gas prices as a result of this battle going on in the Middle East. And then we've got to have some allies standing with us with North Korea in that diplomatic kind of conversation. And we saw, and the vote that was taken, the Americans voted to veto a proposal that would have condemned Israelis' military aggressiveness. And Japan said, well, no, you know, we're not going along with that. And we need Japan in that conversation. So it, definitely, it's not just about combat fatigue in some sort of psychological way. It's about a practical way, as Robert has said, and it's about understanding that diplomacy is really the only way that we can go when we understand that we are a part of the world.
And you've also got, in terms of all the nations that are getting involved as well, you remember Israel, aside from dealing with Hezbollah, is also getting attacks from the south as well. In terms of dealing with Gaza, and you also had this Palestinian insurgency through Egypt as well. So I mean, all of these nations, Egypt, Jordan, all of them have a stake in this, and I think that's one of the reasons why they're trying to clamp down some of these pressures.
And arguably, every nation has a stake in this as well. I'm going to have to leave it there. We have definitely had a great conversation about this. Just talking to Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, co-director of immigration studies at New York University, both at our New York Bureau. Also, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on Boston show Beat the Press. She was at Harvard University Studios. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for
it. Thank you.
Thank you.